Coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm.
Well, hello, 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 everybody. Chris Jordan here, coming at you live from Austin, Texas. Get ready for a whole slew of pre-records, folks. As of right now, coming up, I will about 95% right now be going to Belize with our good friend and guest Jared Murphy to help document the expedition there searching for ruins on some private property. That they believe they have some ruins. We're going to go down there, check for the infamous Terra Preta, all kinds of things, some ruins possibly off the coast. So very interesting expedition. I'm very, very excited to be a part of it and very excited to have been invited by Jared Murphy et al. So thank you guys for that. I'm looking forward to it. And like I said, get ready for a whole slew of fully pre-recorded episodes. As you guys know, I am insistent on the fact that even though I am gone on the road for work, as I'll be in May, things like that, you never get repeat content on this show. I've never put out a best of episode. I've never like, hey guys, here's one from 2 years ago. Nothing against the shows that do. I used to work on shows that did that. I used to build those shows. They're super fun. I just prefer always having new content, just constant streams of new content. So, that's what I'm insistent on. That's what happens. And, I'm looking forward to pre-producing a whole bunch of stuff, looking forward to the adventures that will be happening with all of that. Our adventures tonight, we will be joined by Behar County Bigfoot, our new friend Rod Nichols. We had a chance to meet him out at the Texas Legends and Monsters event in Cibolo a couple weeks ago. That was a great event. Super fun. We got to meet those guys at the pre-con VIP party, and super great. Me and my brother just went down a rabbit hole of videos and pictures, things like that from their social media accounts. And I was like, man, I got to get these guys on. So the day of the conference, I invited them to come on. We've connected, and that is who our guest will be in the first segment. After a commercial break, of course, as always, our pre-recorded guest, our good friend Ann Celine, will be coming on. From Caravan of Lore and KPNL Radio, where we are carried in replay format. She will be talking with us about vampires, kind of the history of vampires, going all the way back to ancient Greece to the Nosferatu concept in Eastern Europe, and how it's become romanticized and even the modern concept of energetic vampires, things like that. So we kind of go over the whole panoply of what vampire is, what it is to be a vampire in the modern sense. So really, really interesting interview there. Stay tuned for that after the commercial break. Of course, before we bring you our first guest tonight, it is time for the news of the week. News of the week is always brought to you by the Curious Realm Facebook group. Stop on by Facebook, join the conversation. It's a utterly open public group, nothing private about it. You start posting ads or crazy things like, you know, like Seinfeld is dead, things like that. You're going to be gone, though. I'm telling you that. But let's check out some of the news that we have posted this week out of The Guardian. A meatball from long extinct mammoth has been created by a food firm. That was out of TheGuardian.com. Really wild article out of CBS News. Amazon delivery driver goes viral for dropping off package during a police standoff in North Carolina. That was a hilarious story where it's like, literally, they just went on about their business, like past the line of police cars and cops holding guns toward a home and everything, and just walked right up and delivered a package. Classy. And out of Daily Star, you can now experience death in a virtual reality simulation with disturbing new simulation. I am trying to contact those folks to get them on. Out of Science Alert, radical NASA propulsion concept could reach interstellar space in under 5 years. And out of CNN.com, tourist survives bungee jump fall in Thailand after cord snaps. That is just some of the news that is fit to print out there on social media, folks. Stop on by the Curious Realm Facebook group. Join the conversation. Follow the Curious Realm page. Of course, while you're there, make sure to stop on by CuriousRealm.com. That's where you can get all the episodes. That's where you can visit the story page. If you have your own story of a Bigfoot sighting, a cryptid experience, if you're a targeted individual, what have you, stop on by and share your experience with us at CuriousRealm.com/story. We will keep your identity private if you like, but we would love to present your case and your evidence to our professionals and our researchers whenever we have them on. And speaking of researchers, in this segment, we've got field researcher Rod Nichols, the founder of Behar County Bigfoot Research Project, on. I'd like to play you a little bit of one of his videos here because it's pretty remarkable stuff.
This. What in the world? Look at this. Whoa. This is insane. I've never seen such huge wood structures. Look at that.
And these are massive structures, folks. Like, don't get me wrong, I've made some little things, stuff like that, but these are literal, like, trees.
That's torn off.
Some of them. Huge, huge, massive pieces that would be multiple hundreds of pounds. Please welcome to the show.
Please tell me how homeless people did this.
Rod Nichols. Or human. How are you doing today, my friend?
Hey, man, doing good. How are you?
Doing fantastic. This was just, once again, one of the many videos that my brother and I were just rabbit-holing on the day of the conference and stuff like that during breaks. And it's phenomenal to me. Once again, the Bigfoot community, I have been impressed with in so many ways over the last year or so, going out to conventions. I work in the convention world. And I'm a fly on the wall at a lot of things. And I attend a lot of conventions personally, but specifically the Bigfoot community has a different concept than a lot of other communities. You have diehard squatchers. You have people that are out like every other weekend with trail cameras and stuff like that. People like you who are out in their local area finding these huge, large structures, which once again, if homeless people were building that, you would see a lot more remnant of other things. You know, you would see lawn chairs, that kind of stuff, fire pits, all kinds of things. And it's phenomenal to me to see the number of literal citizen scientists when it comes to the Bigfoot community, folks like you that are out there doing this regularly. What was it that first got you into the world of cryptozoology and Bigfoot to begin with, Rod?
So, you know, it started when I was in elementary school. I mean, I was that kid at the book fair that was looking for the Loch Ness Monster, Bigfoot books. And that's what I gravitated towards. I've always gravitated towards the weird and unusual. And in my mind, I feel like I believed, I mean, from a young age, I really do. And, you know, one of the things that really helped me along was Leonard Nimoy's In Search Of. And, you know, that really just fascinated me. And, you know, so from an early age, I felt like I was just a believer from the get-go. And, you know, and then I got into an interest in apes and primates and gorillas and things like that. And I really got into, you know, researching different types of primates and things like that. And I even went as far as, I don't know if you remember Coco the gorilla, the gorilla that
oh,
that
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I was a psychology sociology major for a while. I am more than familiar with Coco, my friend.
Yes. Yeah, so when I was a young guy, you know, I wrote to her and she wrote back to me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was really cool. And, you know, it was one of those things where I guess her caretaker, you know, just translated and you know, transposed it on paper and sure. sent it to me. And that was the coolest thing in the world because I loved, you know, gorillas. That was my thing. So
that's awesome.
You know, yeah. And then, you know, fast forward into my adulthood, you know, where I really got started was, it was actually, it's interesting, Chris, as a low point in my life, honestly, I was on disability. I was hurt. I was at home for a good while. And, I binge watched YouTube videos on Bigfoot over and over and over. And I came across a guy, in Utah and, he's no longer active as a researcher. And this person presented something to me that was just totally new. Like, you know, when you think about Bigfoot and you think about it in, if you're ignorant to the subject and you've heard about it, you think like, well, that's in Washington State. That's where that is, right? No, surely there could be nothing around here. That would not happen. So, but this gentleman, showed a lot of wood structures. That was his, trace evidence, if you will. That's what he showed us. And it was wood structure after wood structure, footprints, a lot of really interesting things that I thought, this is weird. This is really weird. So, you know, there was one video at the very end. I binge watched all of his videos one night. Like I binge watched every one of them. And at the last video he had was, you know, he showed you what he used to find some of this evidence. And a lot of it was all wood structures, which were crazy insane to me. So he said, hey, look, if you think that this is a hoax, if you think that I'm making this up.
Yeah.
This is what I do here. I'm going to show you exactly the methodology that I use, and you go out and you tell me if you think this is a hoax. Like I'm gonna equip you with all of this. So the next day I went out and I utilized the same methodology, just, you know, trying to do it, you know, step by step. And the same day I went out to go find a wood structure, I found one, and it blew me away because I sit there going, there's no freaking way. There's no way. Are you serious? Like, I found one of these things just using what this guy had laid out for his audience. And after that, I was looking at this thing. I was sitting there going, these pieces are big. They're huge. Like, what is going on? Like, is this? And I begin to sit there and think about it and go, all right, is there a team of people that just run around and they put this stuff together? And this is what they do because they want to fool people. And then I begin to look inside of the structure, look at all the pieces, all the little intricacies inside the structure, and it spoke nothing of people. It really didn't. You know, the floor inside that wood structure, it was what you call an A-frame structure, where you've got pieces on either side, and it makes kind of like an A shape, right? So I looked inside of it, and it was very compressed. The leaves were just flat, like something with weight had been in there. There was no sign of human activity as far as like beer cans, cigarette butts, you know, anything like that. So I was like, what is this and who is doing this? So that set me on my journey as a field researcher. And then, you know, I began to understand some of the characteristics of some of these structures. And I started, you know, giving them different names, you know, obviously the A-frame, and you've got wigwam structures, you've got, you know, leans, you've got a bunch of things that, you know, I've heard before.
Oh, yeah. Some of them are straight pole lodge style, where there's a center pole. Very, very interesting structure where, like, if you go and, look at Native American structures that weren't like, let's tear them down and take them with us. you know, wigwam, teepee, things like that. But more were like they had permanent settlement. That's like what they had.
Right. So these things were just, you know, to me, they were, it was a phenomena to me. That's what I looked, that's how I looked. And I began to find more and more and more. And it was interesting because it was all connected by one prominent greenbelt that went through my city. And so I started researching that greenbelt and come to find out the Native Americans used that greenbelt way, way, way back when to come in and out of the city. And so there you go. I was like, okay, so you got safe passage. Now, does the habitat support big game? Which it did. So the big game here would be white-tailed deer. And we have it in abundance. We have abundant amount of white-tailed deer. So, you know, if you're following the food source, you can go up and down this greenway and you could be concealed. I could take the higher ground at some point if I wanted to. I can take plenty of game trails. And all of this green belt had all these wilderness parks connected to them, right? So I began to, I started with one wilderness park and researched, into another one. And every time I would go into these wilderness parks, I would start finding these things. And I thought, okay, all right, it's kids. But then I started looking at these pieces. Some of them are whole trees ripped out of the ground with their root ball system still on them. I was like, what kid is going to have that kind of strength, you know? Yeah. And these, some of these pieces were 10 to 15 feet tall and about, you know, 6 to 8 inches in diameter. Some of them more. Wow. Like what, who is doing this and why? And so I started documenting each structure that was along that green belt. And, it was mind blowing to me because if I found one and I sat there and I said, okay, it's people, and I found nothing else on this, then okay, maybe, okay, it's people. I can say that probably, right? But we're talking about several. I'm talking about, you know, 12 to 18 structures in all following this greenbelt. Why is that happening? What's going on? And again, if you want to go back to the point where I made where I said, well, it's people and they're running around and they're, you know, all this and that. And no, I don't think so. And then also understanding that there's a small percentage of people that know about this stuff, a very minuscule amount of people that know about this stuff. So I have to take that in consideration as well. And then I begin to find, you know, a few prints around these wood structures. And the hard part about where we live is that we've got really hard ground. And so something with substantial weight that would leave an imprint that was deep enough for me to cast. You know, when I saw that, I thought, okay, I've got something. But a lot of them were outlines, which led me believe that maybe some of these creatures are a little bit lesser in weight than what you would see, like the Patty style type of Sasquatch.
Well, I mean, you've got to consider to begin with, my friend, that you're talking about. I mean, if there's a population, there's a breeding population. And even if you look at things the way that Ken Gerhart right there in your own backyard. He does not posit the fact that there is a population there.
Yeah.
But is it a throughway?
Well,
if it's a throughway and if you'll once again look at these Bigfoot sightings across America, like there is this swath right here in between the two. You know, that really does make a lot of sense. And when you start talking about them following migratory patterns, following weather patterns, things, I mean, they're going to follow them no different than any bear, no different than any deer, anything like that. As a matter of fact, they're going to be following them just as much, if not more, because some of them, yes, are their prey. So,
absolutely. And you know, I would say that, you know, the green belt that I've been staying close to goes in and out of the city. It goes in and out of the city. And at one point, it goes into what's called the Edwards Aquifer Recharge Zone. So the Edwards Underground Aquifer is where we get our water. But, you know, that's an underground cavern. And understand that San Antonio literally sits on an underground cavern.
Yeah.
And so I came to that conclusion where I thought, well, you know, there surely we don't know exactly what's down there. We haven't looked at every nook and cranny of this, you know. So I was sitting there going, well, maybe these things, you know, reside underground and then at night they're coming out and hunting and then coming back with their kill and going back underground again. And that was just kind of my theory that I came up
with. Sure.
Because, you know, based off of other encounters and other people, other researchers that have suspected the same thing, using cave systems, things like that. That was just one of those things where I thought, well, maybe that's what's happening. And again, I can't prove any of this stuff. I'm just thinking, trying to think outside the box and trying to, you know, think of other, you know, areas that they, where they might reside or where they might go.
Sure.
And that was the only thing I could think of. And maybe it's a coincidence that this green belt goes right up into that underground cavern and then goes back. You could probably get into one of those caves, come out, hit that greenway and then, you know, hunt and then come back. And that's what I was thinking that possibly could be happening in my area anyway.
Even regardless of underground, anything like that, Rod, the fact is Texas is big, Jack. It's big. The same case that I make whenever people are like, oh, you know, I don't know if we'd have found Bigfoot, you know, up there in the Pacific Northwest, we'd have found him already. We have a lot of that settled. And yeah. I'm going to bring it up real quick just because I always do at this point. But if you Google United States, let's see, United States at night from ISS, and then go to pictures, you will see an image of the United States at night from NASA and NOAA. And I'll bring it up on screen right now for everybody to take a quick look at. Now, granted, this is from 2012. It's one of the latest, though. But if you look at that, it's very interesting how when you look at the United States at night, there is about half of it where there ain't nothing, Jack. And a lot of that is the Pacific Northwest. And a lot of that area is so thick and dense that there are still like 5 planes every decade that get lost there. And planes have transponders.
Yeah.
Like they never find those people or the planes ever again. There are numerous missing planes and people in the Pacific Northwest. Now, you'd think, hey, I mean, hey, that's got a GPS tag on it, man. That's got a FAA beacon.
you'd think you'd be able to find that,
but we can't.
It disappears.
And when you start looking at the sightings maps of the United States with Bigfoot sightings and where they are, and then you look at the United States at night, it's pretty interesting how a lot of that overlaps. When you start talking about large swaths of wooded area, period, large swaths of land, people get lost in them.
Oh, absolutely.
We have thousands of people that cross the border here in Texas and literally walk across.
Oh, yeah.
They are absolutely never seen. You know, and we got drones watching that. We got cameras watching that. So why don't we see them is my question, you know, and it makes a lot of sense to me that if they are a species that's been around that long, they ain't stupid.
No, they ain't stupid.
Like deer know when hunting season ends. They're deer.
they know. They know. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think if we're, you know, I believe these things are an apex predator, hands down.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and
no doubt.
You know, everything that I go off of as far as encounters and sightings are concerned, it, you know, it's just that person telling that story going, man, this thing took the higher ground. And I know what that means. It had the advantage over me. That tells me there's some intelligence going on with this thing. So, you know, I would suspect that if I'm a, a, a creature of that nature with that type of intelligence, yeah, the green belts and the creeks make sense. It's safe passage in and out. And then I've got the food source that I'm following. And then lo and behold, about a half a mile away from where I'm at, we've got a big water source. Yeah. I mean, it's a recipe for some activity. And I tell everybody this. I'm like, look, I can't just roll up to a patch of woods and go, okay, yeah, Bigfoot's been here. Like, the area has to make sense. It has to make sense. Well, there has to be safe passage in and out. I need to have concealment. There has to be some type of creek or green belt, you know?
Well, there's got to be some kind of sign of large game. There's got to be some kind of sign of sustainable vegetation. Because critters that big are grazers by nature. They're going to eat whatever they walk past and then hunt as well. We actually had a listener on one of the social media feeds ask, when are you doing this research? Are you going out at night and then coming back and documenting it during the day? What is your, and I don't want you to give away every methodology that you have, because yes, it will end up the fact that people, and we had this conversation, it can be a dangerous fact that you end up with just tons of people traipsing through trying to find stuff. Don't get me wrong, it can be a good thing if done properly, but if done improperly, it destroys anything that could be found that could be good.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, so most of everything that I do is during the day. Now I've got a friend of mine, Chris, he's another Chris who's done lots of night investigations.
Chris Randolph?
That's
Chris, who asked. Randolph.
So Chris is always asking, when are you going to go out at night? When are you going out at night? You know, and we've gone out, at night at one point in time. And I just really would like to have, some of the equipment that, to utilize, for night investigations. Like I just got into getting into, night vision. Monocular what I've got now. We've actually deployed a voice recorder and let it set overnight for about 24 hours. And I'm still sifting through that audio, and there's some interesting stuff going on there. And then there's, you know, hopefully we've got a goal of trying to get a thermal camera, and those things are just, you know, crazy expensive. But, you know, those are the goals that we have. And I think right now, as it stands, I'm okay with documenting these wood structures and some of this trace evidence during the day. And that leads back to somebody who had asked me, would you like to have an encounter or a sighting? My answer to that is maybe at about a few hundred yards away, you know?
Where you could actively observe and see something and where it's not to the point that you frighten it and it frightens you.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and again, it's one of those things where we want to do night investigations. I'm just such a perfectionist that I want to have all the things in line in my mind to do that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Not that you need all this stuff, but that is who I am.
There are some things that you definitely need in line. Like, for instance, for the upcoming expedition that I'm going on, like I bought a Garmin GPS unit.
There you go.
If you're going out in the middle of the woods, I'd venture to say that is a worthwhile $200 investment. Because are you going to be able to, without cell phone signal, be able to have your location, but you can also pin things and mark the location and it'll mark the day, the time. You can see what time the sunrise is in that location, all kinds of stuff. Like you can get an amazing amount of data right there that you're gathering off of a direct satellite connection instead of pinging through towers.
That's the way to do it.
It's an invaluable piece of gear that, if you're going to go out on a night investigation, I don't even know that I would trade, because compass navigation's great, but are you trained in compass navigation at night? Because most compass navigation requires you to be able to sight something that you can keep in your sight while you walk.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, here's the other part of it that most people don't know about what I do. Some of these sites are not just pieces of property that I can roll up on. Some of these, all these are wilderness parks where, you know, it's kind of like a trespassing type of thing. So I have to be careful with where I go and how I do it type of thing. So it's kind of a fine line with the night investigation. Now, if somebody had contacted me and said, "Hey, Rod, I feel like I've got these things on my property. This is what's going on. This is what's going on." Great. Okay. Now let's get out there. Now I've got the permission of that person, you know, to go out and investigate.
Yeah. Someone has a deer leash that they've found tracks or sign on or has suspicion. Right. That's a totally different scenario. You've got utter permission to go out there and be out there at night. I mean, I did my fair share of work in the paranormal field previously, and it's the same thing. You can't just roll up. I mean, Texas ain't the state to just roll up on property in the dark, or even in the middle of the day in some places.
They shoot first and they ask questions after.
Yeah,
that's it.
Lord forbid there's a horse involved. there ain't even going to be questions trouble. At that point. Oh, you shot him? I figured that's the case. but you know, all joking aside, once you get ready to go out in the field, like you said, the reason you go out during the day is because there are specific things that you are looking for. You have been given methodologies to be able to find this stuff on the pretty regular basis. And that's not saying that like you're shooting an 80% or that you're even shooting a 50, 60, 40%. But you got quite a few videos, and as a singular individual to have quite so many videos, it's pretty incredible.
To me, it's fascinating because, we're talking about these wood structures and all this trace evidence that's not only just found in the green belt that I'm actively researching, but there's other creek green belts in the city where I found equally big or bigger wood structures. So then now I'm sitting there going, okay, so I've got it. If I've got it here in one area of the side of town that I'm at, and I go to another site and I'm finding the same thing, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
You know, and that's the big question. Like, you know, why and how? And if you're going to tell me it's people, this is a well orchestrated hoax. Maybe the most well orchestrated hoax in mankind history, you know? So if you're talking about a team of people, if that's the case, you know? So, I just, and again, going back to the, I always, and here's what I'll do with my videos. I'll always point you towards some of the sizes of these pieces. These pieces are huge. Who is going to pick these? Who is going to pull these trees out by the root system and then fashion them in a way where, you know, it's just abnormal. It's weird, you know?
Yeah.
Why? You know, and that's just the thing that keeps me going.
Well, that's just it. And once you're on trail of something, it's hard not to doggedly chase it if you have availability to it, you know? And it certainly seems like you do. You've got some proper technique going as far as documenting things, making sure that you take proper pictures, rulers, everything else, even the number of footprints that you have found are pretty remarkable. And like you said, some of them smaller than other things. But once again, if there's one, guaranteed there's more than one.
Absolutely.
You know, and they ain't all the same size. They ain't all the same age. They don't come out that size.
No, no, not at all. They don't.
Deer don't come out with antlers.
No, not at all.
You know,
and more notably, we've had historically we've had sightings. You remember, you know, being, listening to Lyle and Ken about the sightings, you know, back in 79 here, yeah, all the way up to the 2000s. And there was another person that came forward about 7-8 months ago last year that it was a friend of a friend. And this is a credible source because the friend of a friend is a researcher as well. And I trust him and I trust his judgment. He had a friend of a friend's wife who was driving at night. She's a nurse. She was driving in an area where I've found numerous wood structures and came across one of these creatures crossing the street. And it floored her and it freaked her out. She said this thing just nonchalantly just walked across the street like no big deal, went into the wood line, turned around, grabbed one of the trees and just stood there and stared at her. And by the time she was just able to get her wits about her, she was like, I hit the gas. This thing was scary. And so, you know, that leads me to believe that there's more sightings and encounters, but people just aren't willing to give it up. And rightfully so. It could be traumatizing. You don't want to be
traumatizing. That is a topic that we talk about regularly on this show with researchers, Rod. I've got books, not just behind me on this side, not just behind me on this side, an equal amount. But outside, I mean, heck, man, I came back with like 15 books from the conference we met at. I don't know of a single one where there are accounts of encounters of anything where the people were not scared out of their mind or were not afraid to tell people about it because they would think that they were out of their mind.
Yeah, the ridicule is what really I think, and I mean, I'm not
sometimes
say
it's the
isn't.
It's the straight fear. You're scared. You don't even know if what you saw was real or not.
Absolutely,
but it scared PTSD, the living hell out of you. And some of these people are like diehard ranchers, diehard hunters, diehard military folk, things like that. People that have been through some things, seen some things, you know, Yeah, it has affected them most definitely.
And what's interesting about, you know, our area is that, well, not interesting. We have no bears here. So you can rule out bears, right? So I get people telling me bears. I'm like, no, there's nothing. There's no bears here. Like, what are you talking about? Like, you know, so you got to rule out a lot of these animals, you know, that people would typically throw in the mix and go, oh, that's a bear. Oh, that's we don't have that here. So what else are you going to tell me? What else you got for me? You know, and at that point, there's nothing else you could tell me other than, okay, if it's a human, cool. You know, there would be signs of human activity. You know, if it's a human, we're talking about a human that's probably at least 500-600 pounds in excess, that's leaving these impressions, you know? So, I mean, what else are you going to tell me? I don't know. I mean, we rarely have mountain lion sightings here. It does happen, but it's very rare. So, you know, I can't rule out the fact that, yeah, we have these creatures running through here and thriving and hunting. And, you know, my only problem is that, and this is the quest for me, where do they reside? Where do they go? are they nomads? Are they just, is there a group of them that come through and then leave? You know, so, and that's something I may never find out, but that's okay.
Well, there's more than one. I think you'd be hard pressed to find a bison's home.
Yeah.
Out in the wild, like, sure, you could track them and you could find where they bed down, but is that their home?
Yeah,
no,
absolutely.
Like, it's the closest field close to water come nightfall. That's where they bed down. They're cows, man.
Yeah.
You know, and when you're talking large game like that, there are some, like, yes, bears, once again, they will have a home. They have somewhere that they go, they den up, what have you. Wolves. But yeah, aside from that, you know, to know that this large species is out there and it might sleep somewhere for an evening, but is that home? you know, right. Like, yeah. Yeah. I guess it depends on how long the food's right there.
If the critter's moved on
and it's hungry, likely it's going to move on until it finds food.
Yeah. And it's going to follow the food source, you know.
Well, especially if it is of the means, Rod, to, because your average black bear, which once again, not hunted to extinction in Texas, but no longer here in the hill country, no longer in southwest Texas. Like you go out to Big Bend, close to New Mexico, things like that. Yeah, absolutely. East Texas, Central Texas, no. You aren't going to find wild bear anymore. Wild black bear. It's not going to happen. Now, do wild black bear build structures before they go to bed at night? No.
No, they don't.
But there's nothing saying that a big old critter, knowing that things are coming a couple hours before bedtime, ain't going to throw something together to keep a little draft off of it, you know, to the best of its ability.
You know, I came in, and there's a researcher that I had listened to who had this theory that some of these wood structures that are made, and this is what it kind of resonated with me. He said that he thought that these things built these wood structures to put the little ones in while they go out and hunt, so they're secure. And then they add their kill, they grab the little one, and they're out. And I can kind of see where that's coming from, because some of these wood structures that I find they won't fit a 7-8 foot creature in some of these things. And that poses another question that people ask me, like, well, there's no way Bigfoot would live in this because it's too small. And I'm like, hey, okay, well, I can't tell you that, number one. Number two,
it ain't about living it. It's about crashing it for the night.
It could be something that they use to put their little ones in. I can kind of get behind that, because, you know, again, based off of encounters and sightings, you know, people have seen the mom and the dad and, you know, the little ones, you know, all that stuff. And so that, you know, obviously there's a, like you were talking about, a breeding population with kids, and, you know, I don't know if they, you know, run in clans or groups. Again, all this is based off of encounters and sightings that I've heard from, you know, that person talking about their experience. And, you know, so I can sit there and go, yeah, I think this could be something like that. But then there's some wood structures, like you just showed in the beginning, that are giant, that are big. Like, okay, a 7-8 foot creature could get in there and, you know, chill out for a little bit. So, you know, there's so many different types of structures and you know, in the one that you're showing right now, that is the biggest wood structure I've ever come across.
Massive. It's a sprawl.
I have sent those videos, and there's other videos that I've got from the beginning when I found that thing, and I've sent it to other people that are researchers, and it blows their mind. And, you know, and the first time I brought somebody with me that was a believer that I believed wouldn't, like, give away my location and stuff like that. This guy's a wildlife biologist. Yeah. And I brought him with me, and I said, okay, tell me, what is this? And that guy had no answer for me. He was like, he was perplexed. You could see it on his face. Yeah. He had no idea what was going. He's like, why would a human build this? Number one. Okay. But wait a minute. I don't know if this is derived from human. This looks very primitive. It looks like something maybe an ape would do.
Which is why I was bringing up the orangutan study, talking about how they're expert engineers at building nests in trees. And when you look at an orangutan's a big critter.
Yep.
Like that is a people size animal that will run on a couple hundred pounds, you know? So to consider the fact that at 100-150 pounds, it's able to climb the trees and build a nest out on branches. Yep. enough to support its weight, and maybe enough to support the weight of its child. Stuff like that.
Absolutely.
That's pretty incredible. Absolutely. And granted, different activity than what we're talking about, because once again, it's not like this is a nesting situation. You know, if it was a nesting situation, you would see remnants of food, you would see excrement, you would see all kinds of things. This, it seems much more like a passing lodge. You know, where I pass through here regularly enough, so may as well throw something together for those nights, you know?
Right. Yeah. And that's something you just touched on, that, man, I feel like that's kind of what's happening, you know, possibly, but nevertheless, you can't rule out the size of these things and the pieces that are involved. You know, and I really have to point people back towards, if I'm showing you a tree that's been torn limb from limb and all we've got is that one straight piece, the trunk, and it's got the root ball system on it, and it's all laid over to make one big wood structure. We're talking about people that we would have to have a team of people to come and build these things and put them together and have the ingenuity to build the roof, to build the sidewall, all this stuff. So, I don't know anybody. I don't know any. And I told my wife this. I said, look, I think that if it was people, and as many
don't get
times,
me wrong. Like, you, if you have about 16 active Eagle Scout groups in your area, maybe that's what you're finding. You know, because they're going to have a survival weekend where literally they're sent out, and it's like, here you go, kids. You got these five items. We'll see you in 2 days. They have to build shelter. They have to find food. They have to build fire, all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
So sure. But once again, to find the quantity that you're finding, even with the number, and I don't know offhand how many times you've been out, Rod, but I know how many videos you got. And I know how many pictures that you've sent me of structures that are different structures, not the same structure.
No,
you know,
not the same.
And even if you were considering the fact that this is a 1 out of 20 situation, 1 out of 50 situation, incredible, incredible.
Absolutely. And you know, it's one of those things where you sit there and you go, I sit there on the daily, Chris, and I go, what am I chasing?
Yeah.
You know, and cause all I've got are these wood structures that are just insane. Right. And I thought, you know, if it going back to my point with, you know, hey, if it was people, as many times as I've been to my sites, Chris, day, morning, towards the evening, toward the afternoon. In the past 5 years, Chris, I would have run into somebody building these things already.
And you know, that was going to be one of my questions. Have you ever run into other people while you're there? And also, how frequently? Because I asked you, I'm not going to get into the discussion that we had in detail because I want that to be a private discussion between us. But have you revisited the same sites? Are they still there? Have they expanded? Are they different? Mm-hmm. Have you found new sign?
Yes. And the answer is yes to all of that because I'm consistent with my areas.
Yeah.
And I have to document every little thing. Something's changed. This is moved. Now this piece is over here. I have to do that because I'm trying to put the pieces of the puzzle together, which again, you know, it's again, like, it's like chasing a ghost, but the fact remains that these things do evolve. They change. Some of them will be obliterated. Like it was like a war zone. These things are, you'll have wood torn up all over the place. And then, you know, a week later, a new one pops up. That's, you know, totally different. And it's got totally different,
same location.
You know, same location.
Wow. Yes. Wow.
And I have to keep an eye on my areas to document these things, even if it's minuscule, you know, a little change here and there. I have to document it because to me, if I'm collecting all this data, my thing with this is that I'm hoping that someday somebody will take the videos and everything and go, this is another piece of the puzzle. Rod has done this and we've got this, this, this. Oh, that makes sense, right? So I'm trying to document every little thing because I can't rule out a little piece that's moved here or a big piece that's moved there. I have to, you know? So to me, that matters. And again, many times as I've been to these sites over the past 5 years that I've been doing this, you would have thought I would have run into somebody already trying to build these things. I have not. I have not run into one person at all trying to build these things.
Have you put up trail cameras nearby or anything like that?
So that is something that people ask me all the time. And I have not put up a trail cam only because all of the evidence that I've seen with trail cams, you know, maybe we'll get a hand or a piece of hair or something. I don't know. There's a whole theory about how these creatures could possibly see infrared light, and that's a dead giveaway. And
oh, absolutely. No doubt about it. Like, cats can see infrared.
Right. And I think this is also, there's also a study with coyotes about them seeing IR light and staying away, you know, from it or what, you know, there's all these different studies. But to me, everything that I've seen with trail cams, Chris, has, I mean, and to go be wrong, some of it's kind of strange. I got you. Mm. But 9 times out of 10, these things are trying to like dismantle them and take them out. You know, so I thought, well, okay, let's try something else. So, you know, a good buddy of mine, Christopher Noel, who been an active researcher and author for a number of years, had shared with me, hey, look, man, I deploy voice recorders, and that's a little piece of it. But hey, man, put one, hide it somewhere, and then set it to record. Come back and pick it up after 24 hours and listen to that audio. See what you capture. And he sent me one of his to borrow when I was just starting, and we've got some wood knocks going on with this the recordings, and so, you know, man, there was something going on. You know, can we see it? No, unfortunately, we can't. But I think the whole game cam thing is, I'm not going to say I won't rule it out.
Sure.
But everything that I've seen with other researchers, game cams yields really not that much. So I don't know if that's something for me to go. I'm going to go and spend $150 for nothing to happen. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's just one of those things. So
Well. And which one do you watch? How long do you watch it? There is very much a stab in the dark with that. I mean, granted, yes, you do have a structure, but that does not mean that it will be revisited. That does not mean that it will be altered. That does not mean anything.
It does not mean that it was possibly built by people too, as well.
Once again, hey man, I watch a lot of Alone with my wife. Like, that's one of our shows, Jack. And there's a good grip of people out there that have a set of survival skills, you know.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Hey, you want to build structures quick and be able to do it. There's only one way to do it, and that's to practice.
Absolutely. Well, and the one thing I want to add to all of this is that, you know, all these wilderness parks that are connected by one green belt are parks that you cannot camp in.
Yeah,
you cannot camp in these parks. So again,
and a lot of people don't realize, man, like, your green belt connects to our green belt. Like, Edwards Aquifer comes straight up right on the outskirts of Austin.
Yes.
You know, like, our green belts utterly connect via trails and stuff like that.
And you guys have the Brushy Creek, where there's some weird stuff going on there as well. And people have had encounters. So, you know, and there's no coincidence that it's a creek. It's a creek that has the passage in and out, you know, safe. You've got the habitat of sports, big game, all that stuff.
So. You know, Rod, maybe you should come up here and I should get some of my equipment and we should go out and check out Brushy Creek and look for things.
I am down.
That would be interesting. If anything, it'd be interesting content.
Amazing content.
But let's definitely make that happen. You know, like that's not too far off. It'd be interesting. You know, and I don't know that anybody has really applied your techniques to the area. So
yeah. Absolutely.
It would be interesting. Rod, I want to thank you so much, for the time and the conversation at the show a couple weeks ago, as well as the conversation tonight. It's been fantastic. I want you to come back on again and again and again. I love being able to get updates from people that are out doing field research, out doing things like this, out building communities like you are. Let everybody know. Before we let you go, where they can go to follow you on social media, where they can go to subscribe to you on YouTube, all that kind of good stuff, my friend.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got the YouTube channel, and I didn't want to try and correct you, Chris. It's pronounced Bear County.
Bear, yes. Sorry,
it's okay. No worries.
It's Bear one of those. My wife was like, "It's not Bexar." I was like, "No. If anything, it would be Behar, because it's an X in between two vowels." So I was like, "That's normally a soft H sound, like Oaxaca."
No, I would have thought the same exact thing.
Yeah, but that is the first time I have ever heard it is Bear County. So now I know
Bear County Bigfoot Instagram, just like how it sounds, Bear County Bigfoot, Bear County Bigfoot on Facebook. That's the group that I've got. And then I'm also an administrator for Bigfoot 101 and the South Texas Bigfoot Research Alliance as well.
Awesome.
Those are both my groups. And then YouTube, it's Bear County Bigfoot as well. And then recently I got into the TikTok game. So
oh God,
that's Bear County as well. So yeah,
Bigfoot now belongs to the Chinese government.
I fought that, but man, it is a thriving.
I have been told by more than one person that I need to get involved with TikTok. I'm like, God, I feel so old.
Man, I don't know. It's just one of those things where I'm just like, okay, fine.
If it's the relevant place to be for your content and your audience, do it. You know, and if that is what is resulting in spreading your message to further places and getting more eyes on your research, do it, Rod.
There it is. Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's really what it's about is, once again, chronicling things the way that you are. You're doing a great job of that.
And
sharing that chronicle, with the right people, and not just researchers here, but other researchers as well. So, once again, thank you so much for your time. I look forward to having you on again and again, awesome. Rod.
It was an honor. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to go ahead and let you go while we sign off this part of the episode, head out to commercial. Thank you so much again. Take care of yourself. We will be in touch with links for all this stuff tomorrow morning, Rod. So,
awesome. Thank you.
All right.
Man.
Take care, man.
Take care, bud.
Absolutely. Bear County Bigfoot, everybody, make sure to stop on by YouTube, follow them. He's got some amazing footage. He's got a great community going on Facebook. Make sure to stop on by there and join him there as well. That is Bear County, BEXAR is how you spell Bear County, folks. So while you're online checking all that out, of course, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. Share your story with us. CuriousRealm.com/story is where you can find our experiencer page with our survey. We will, of course, keep your name anonymous if you like, but you can share your pictures with us. You can share video, audio, all kinds of things. We would love to hear from you so we can share your story with our experts. When we come back from this commercial break, we will be joined by Ann Celine in a pre-recorded interview. She is the head of KPNL Radio, tons of paranormal content and shows, including us, in replay format on Wednesdays. She's also the head of the Caravan of Lore, and we're going to be talking about vampires through history, the concept of vampirism, the concept of vampiric relationships, believe it or not, the concept of good vampiric relationships. We're going to be going into a deep dive into vampirism with Anseline when we get back right after these messages, folks. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spagyric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies. Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultation and workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is PodcastCadet.com. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests.
Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at curiousrealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is curiousrealm.com/store.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back from that commercial break. We had a great time a couple weeks ago at the Texas Monsters and Legends Festival out in Cibolo, Texas, and it was great meeting the guys from Behar County Bigfoot. It was great having them on tonight. There is so much that is out there when it comes to that. And, you know, speaking of legendary things, we have on tonight talking about vampires, actually. I have in my hand The Vampire by Montague Summers. This is kind of one of the if you want to go through and really learn quite a bit about the history of vampires. He also wrote like the history of witchcraft. Does some really comprehensive work bringing some things together. We're talking with Ann Celine today from KPNL Radio and Caravan of Lore about vampires, the origins of vampires, vampires in our modern society, and even what psychic vampires are, things like that. So welcome back to the show, Ann. How are you doing?
I'm wonderful. I'm so excited to be back here. How are you?
Doing fantastic. I wanted to start us off with, because not a lot of people realize how far back the concept of vampirism goes. And here's just an example, once again, from The Vampire by Montague Summers, but he is referencing the Odyssey. And let's see here. It will be remembered in the famous necromantic passage in the Odyssey when Ulysses calls upon the ghosts from the underworld in order that they may recover the power of speech. He has to dig up a trench and therein pour the blood of sacrifice and black rams, and it is only after they have quaffed their fill of this precious liquor that the phantoms may converse with him and enjoy something of their human powers and mortal faculties. So going back to ancient Greece, the concept of the vampire, the concept of actively consuming blood or the energy of somebody or something else has been around. It's a fascinating subculture in the world today to see it not only still around, but romanticized in the fashion that it is.
Oh, I agree. It's definitely become romanticized. Going back as far as I can remember in my own life, I remember seeing Dracula, the different Dracula films, and I remember their clothing and the actors and actresses that they would hire and the storylines, you know, the beautiful girl and her being seduced by the, you know, tall, dark, and handsome vampire.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, and of course it wasn't always that way, because when we go back to the very first, I believe it was the very first film, Nosferatu, he was quite different. Very grotesque and completely different from what we have today. And it's really interesting as well, something that I haven't necessarily looked into quite yet, but when we talk about the consuming of blood and how far back that goes, I've also heard a lot in regards to blood being symbolism for our energy. And it's something that in the modern day, I have learned that it was kind of the symbolism of, okay, you know, we have this essence about us. We have this thing inside of us, this energy, but you can't see it. So then they've used blood as the physical, you know, symbol of consuming that.
Yeah, yeah. And quite literally, once again, the idea of that being the life source, that being basically the vein through which life flows, quite literally, and being able to absorb that would allow you to absorb somebody's power.
Right. Yeah. Which is amazing, and something that, I mean, if we go into, when we talk about absorbing people's power or absorbing people's energy, there's so much information about that as well. I mean, because if you hop on the other side, though, not just taking energy, but giving it, because on the opposite side, you have different things like, say, Reiki, energy healing, where you can give somebody your energy or, you know, filter energy from the universe through you, and you're giving it to that other person.
Sure. Sure. And, you know, once again, that energy is, I personally believe, fully transferable. I don't see within the realm of physics how we cannot have the concept of afterlife. Energy can only transform, can't be created or destroyed. You know, it might be potential energy and then it becomes, but it was still there and it was still potential.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, for me, the idea of transference of energy is definitely a reality, and was quite the reality for many, many cultures for all the way through to modern times. The concept of vampires and the dead rising from the grave or coming back to life still there.
No, that was one area that I found really interesting when I was looking into vampirism, is the rising from the grave and how in early times we didn't quite understand the process of death and the different stages the body goes through. And so when you would see the body and, you know, the way that the blood might pool, or the groaning that you could hear from the gases moving, or, I mean, it was a pretty grotesque study there, but it was interesting to learn that, you know, all these natural processes, they took as something terrifying and believed that, oh my gosh, no, this was a vampire and it rose and it fed, and this is the proof that it fed, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And even the weeping of internal fluids from the mouth, the weeping of internal fluids from the eyes and ears, nose cavities, things like that, that are a normal process of decomposition for a non-embalmed body. Right. Like you said, something that, I mean, heck, people forget the fact that we didn't start washing hands with regularity until the 1900s, man.
Like, oh, man.
Like, we still thought that it was like bad air around us, you know. we didn't buy into that whole bacterium thing, you know.
Right.
So to think about this, even the concepts of vampirism as, quote, archaic is hilarious to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because is not that far in our distant past, you know. The ideas of this, and once again, even the not just the romanticization of the idea, but the westernization of the idea. Whenever one of the things that we talk about with people like Ryan Edwards is whenever you have ideas that meet a local culture that come from outside. Like, a prime example is the way that the Wendigo changed once Westerners became aware of it, and people coming into the area became aware of it. It very much became much more like a werewolf things like that. Right. Because that's what they could identify with, you know. And once right. again, the ideas of vampires, things that come to either take life force or energy, exist culture-wide almost across the world.
Right. No, this is true. And, you know, going back to the romanticism of it as well, I have found myself caught up in the idea of immortality. I mean, and that's, I mean, gosh, immortality is something that you can find information on from all over the world, dating really far back. And I know that I've written and talked about how amazing it would be to have been there to hear Mozart, you know, play his first piece, or to see Picasso put his brush on the canvas for the first time, to be able to see all the changes that the world has gone through, and then the idea of what's to come, and to think about everything that we've been through, and then to kind of be able to project and guess, okay, well, what's going to happen in the future then, and see if you're right, you know, and I think it's a beautiful thing. It's definitely a beautiful thing. But at the same time, yes, you would lose everybody that you know. And I mean, if they weren't turned. So it's beautiful, but it's heartbreaking at the same time. And when you have something that plays on multiple emotions like that, it does have a habit of transfixing you.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it can have a habit of becoming an obsession even and seeking that. And when you're talking about something along the lines of, like you said, immortality, people would go to extremes. And especially when you're talking about older cultures and the concepts that they have as far as magic, black magic, connection to other realms, things like that. Most definitely, I think people have taken things to the extremes culturally when it comes to vampirism, cannibalism. It's really interesting. Even the idea of cannibalism being so literally rampant in our society right now. It's pretty fascinating, because we've had the conversation before on the show about how right now we are really experiencing the echo of the spiritualist movement that happened in the latter part of the 1800s, first part of the 1900s. And really seeing a resurgence of a lot of that, and to the point of where it was when people like Harry Houdini were out like debunking it, where, yeah, like people are back to the point of paying commas and zeros to try to get answers from the other side, and seeing mediums and seeing other people. So, when you're talking about, I guess, trying to seek that, immortal life, trying to seek something out, and even a confirmation of belief, even trying to seek a confirmation of belief in it can be overpowering.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, when we think about, you know, when we talk about the Fountain of Youth, or if we look at history, I have a book that had, vampires in history, and it talked about different people that they would classify as vampires, and one of them was Elizabeth Bathory. And the story that I know of her is that she would bathe in the blood of young girls because she believed that it would keep her young, and that's a story that I've heard before in scenarios.
Yep.
And I mean, that's an extreme. With you believe that you want to be immortal so bad, you're seeking that fountain of youth, that you would go to such an extreme to try and have that.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. And it's, I popped up on screen a while ago, the idea of the vampire facial.
Right.
And you know, that is once again an example of, and granted, an extreme treatment for the extension of beauty.
Exactly.
And whether you're using needles in your own hemoglobin-rich blood, what have you, mm-hmm. it's an example of the extreme through which you are willing to go.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, and it's crazy how far people really are willing to go, how much they want that.
Well, and granted, you know, when you go back and you look at a lot of things, especially in relation to Middle Ages, medieval Europe, the concept of blood, even the regular and regularity of bloodletting when it came to healing, when it came to, you know, taking care of the humors, as it was called, you know, because you had your blood, you had phlegm, bile, all sorts of different humors inside of you that were different colors, and they all did different things. And if you had too much of one, then you had to let some of the others, you know, it was a right. delicate balance of the four parts of your system, so to speak. Very much a medical adaptation of the four elements in witchcraft and herbalism. So yeah, very, very wild. And when you start seeing the marriage between those and the marriage of bloodletting and vampirism, it's really interesting. It's really interesting.
Yeah, no, it's definitely fascinating. And it's been amazing to see within my own life the change from being younger and learning about vampires in history, vampires in the movies, and then to walk into a world where people call themselves vampires. And you know, self-identifying as a vampire.
Sure.
And again, that goes, I mean, well, I've seen different documentaries. There are people that, I guess they'd be called sanguinarians. Mm-hmm. And they actually do believe that by taking in the blood of another, and it may just be a drop, but they, you know, they do, will do little cuts or whatever and then take that in. And they believe that they've been given this really big life force, and they have convinced themselves that they have to feed on that and they have to have that donor. Which is amazing. And there's some people that try to say, oh, well, it's, you know, because I have a iron deficiency or I have some other kind of deficiency. Yeah. It's a world that I've definitely never really dove into. But my world is more of your energy and, you know, life force. And I think that what they are really giving is life force, is energy.
Well, sure. And I mean, I won't deny it. I'm a rare meat eater. Like I can't stand a steak that isn't bloody. It drives me nuts. However, and you know, yes, what you're talking about, like we were saying, there is a full on subculture of people who, and a very rich, wide and varied subculture of people who are vampires. That is the lifestyle that they have chosen to live. That is the world that they have chosen to live in. And even relationship wise are in the relationship of giver receiver. Right. In that way, and not always in a mutual way.
Right. No, this is true. And that's when you get into psychic vampires, and not everybody necessarily is aware that they could be a psychic vampire. Like, I've heard a lot of the times where you might have the sick or the elderly, and they're needing extra life force. They're needing, and so their body and their energy is, they're taking that in, but not everybody's going to be aware of that. And so you can be around somebody and just feel drained. And again, it's not necessarily a bad thing, because it's, you know, unconscious, but
walk into a room full of 10 children for 20 minutes and then walk out. All right. As someone who used to teach 4, 5, and 6 year olds, go for it. Hop on in. Hop on. There's a reason why those people enjoy a good hard drink at the end of the day to rejuvenate themselves.
I'm right there with you.
But yeah, sincerely, like, they don't mean it. They don't mean to be little energy leeches and just literally suck it away from you. But they do. Mm-hmm. They do.
Yes, they really do. And I'm right there. I'm right there. But then there are those people that are completely aware, and they're vile. They will feed off of negative energy. So they like to create problems, and that chaos that they've created, they feed off of that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and I think that it can kind of get a little bit tricky, because whenever you say psychic vampire, that is usually what people will automatically think about. Yeah. Is the kind of person that wants to create that chaos and feeds off the chaos and just drains you. But some psychic vampires, like we just discussed, they're unconscious. They're not aware of it. You know, and then you have people who are, I don't know if you'd want to classify this like an energetic vampire, but that's where you're more working with energy and you're giving, you're receiving, communing in that way. And again, it has nothing to do with negativity or anything. It's just, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And you know, once again, I think, unfortunately, much like with anything when it comes to paranormal, whether it's Bigfoot, cryptids, UFOs, UAPs, ghost hauntings, exorcisms, people tend to be very myopic in their definition, very inside of a box. And if it doesn't fit inside of a box that they're comfortable with, then it's dismissed. And once again, to think about the idea of a vampiric relationship, because, hey, no offense to the little kid out in my living room, who just got home before we started this interview. I love him. But he was literally a parasite. Like, by all medical means, he was a parasite, like a symbiotic parasite. But for 9 months of his life, that's what he was. You know, by all biological definition.
No, as a parent, I completely understand it. I mean, I definitely know what it's like to be completely drained, trying to, you know, parent or deal with your kids or whatever. And I know that they're not aware of what they're doing.
No, absolutely not. And what a beautiful, once again, symbiotic process. However, when you start, I guess, epigenetically breaking that down, we all start off as a vampire.
Yeah, when you put it that way.
We all start off in a vampiric relationship. So it's actually a much harder cycle for us to break. Not to try to take energy from other people, or not to try to use that.
See, and when you put it that way, I love this, because when you put it that way, it makes sense as well.
Yeah.
Why we get so caught up in the story of vampires and why we've romanticized it.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, because it really does preternaturally make a lot more sense.
Yeah, it does. It really does,
because that's where we all start. Whether it's once again sharing that nutrient from inside prior to birth to sharing the nutrient, literally suckling.
Right.
As an infant, you know, it is something that, and beyond anything else, I think, especially whenever you're talking, paranormal creatures, things like that, there is something about the vampire and about the vampiric nature of things that calls much more to humanity than any of others. And really, once again, that concept of control, that concept of because once again, originally it wasn't a romanticized concept of, hey, this is what I am seeking and you are the gateway to it.
Right.
You know, in that Lestat form of the modern vampire.
Yes.
It was, this is what I need to feed. And if I have to demonically deceive you to get your permission and consent, so be it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it's, when you put it that way as well, it really makes me think about how if you look at the vampire, it looks human. But then all of a sudden, you can see its fangs. And in the early stories, they could transform into a wolf or a bat.
Oh, yeah.
And
into anything.
Yeah. And
mist.
Yes, that's true. That's true. I forgot about that one. You know, we as humans, we forget that we're animals too. And the vampire definitely brings back that side of us. And connects us to our more animalistic nature. And I think that it's something within all of us that sometimes we want to just be able to let go. We want to let our hair down and run wild. And we have that within us, but we've been, you know, we stick those shoes on and we put ourselves in boxes. And so then when we're watching the vampire, we're also envious of their ability to just be a part of nature.
Well, there is that most definitely, but I think even psychologically, it reaches down to the, I think the true frailty of humanity and the necessity of, without somebody else, I have no sustenance.
Right. No, that's true.
Without, there is no survival without somebody else. You know, right? And even whenever you start looking at really the first romanticized account, Dracula, not even the historic character Vlad Dracul, who you know, yes, did some monstrously horrible things. However, go back and read some of the history of Vlad Dracul, and you know, homie was a little justified in his anger, man. Like, he was straight up kidnapped by the enemy with his father and brother and saw them both tortured and beheaded in front of him when he was 8.
And
it became like they became the demon incarnate to him. And when he came to power, it was like, I will crush them by all means necessary. Let me meet a dude from that area. I will put him on a pike for public display. So, and that was really what was coalesced into what we know as Dracula, the first real romanticized character who, without the help of Renfield, his manservant, utterly at the bay of anybody for centuries while he's asleep during the day. Utterly vulnerable, completely killable.
Mm-hmm.
No different than any child in the womb, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Utterly defenseless until the darkness of night.
And that's a terrifying thought. Exactly. It's kind of a scary thought, you know, to when you think about being alone.
Yeah.
And wanting or needing that companionship in whatever form that is, and to realize how frail we are, how delicate life is. That can be very terrifying on many levels.
Yeah. Yeah. And once again, that quote, need for blood, doesn't necessarily have to be for the exsanguination of another. That could very well be the soul connection with somebody, be the soul connection that you have with your local tribe. What have you could be the blood in that situation. So the idea of, once again, vampire being a horrible, bad thing is what we immediately jump to, because that is what we have been dished and spoon-fed. Absolutely.
Exactly. Right.
But when you're talking about a vampiric relationship, when you're talking, once again, even that concept of Renfield and Dracula, you know, Renfield was cared for on his part, too.
Right.
There was a give, there was a take. He could have left at any point. He could have left Master at any point during the day. See ya.
That's true.
What are you gonna do? It's daytime. Right. What are you gonna come chase me? He had chance to leave any time. He was a faithful servant. And it's interesting to explore that. It's interesting to think about vampirism in a modern light. And once again, the idea of an energetic vampire, somebody who, and don't get me wrong, once again, there are tons of horribly narcissistic vampiric people out there who, yes, are fully gaslighting you to get you wound up and feed off of your energy. No doubt. Unfortunately, we as a people and a humanity, that is a part of our psyche that has kept us alive for millennia. So it ain't going anywhere. And no, it's true. Easily hijacked, you know. And yes, you can energetically feed off that fear. There is the whole concept that I want to do a whole episode on. I've been trying to find somebody who's a bit of an expert on it. But the whole concept of harvesting adrenochrome, through fear and torture, basically kidnapping and torturing people. And because of their fear and ongoing fear, their adrenochrome levels are higher in their blood.
Right.
And I've this is basically that. Used terrifying. As a, the concept itself is horrifying and terrifying. And you think like, oh my God, are you serious? You think the organ harvesting thing is just stories. It's not,
right. Oh.
It's not
no.
Like that is that we have had whistleblowers on this show. It is a horrifying, horrifying reality. When you're talking about people being trafficked for what some people only identify as, quote, vampiric ritual, it is a reality. It's a reality. And unfortunately, that is what most people consider whenever they think vampire. They don't think, a consensual, energetic give-take relationship between, host and symbiote.
You know, this is true because as I've ended up, within the paranormal community, and as I've studied and as I've shared my different thoughts on vampires throughout history or different little tidbits that I've found, or even podcasts that I've listened to, I've heard people that identify as vampires go on the show and there will be callers. And the callers will ask about the adrenochrome and the fear and everything. And honestly, I was never aware of that until you know, really getting into it and listening to these other shows.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating to me that this is what people jump to. This is how people look at it.
And
that
once again, the extreme. The extreme,
yeah,
jump immediately to the, and it's hilarious because they're the exact same people who will not accept the moderate side, which is pretty damn factual. It's like, you're so willing to accept the extreme. You're so willing to accept that the extreme is the reality here. when the moderate answer is just so relevant and real and right there.
Yeah.
but yeah, and hey, I'm not debating or denying the fact that that's a thing, and it goes into a lot of people's belief of Illuminati, and whenever you get down to it, the fact of, yes, you know, people who are quite possibly in the cabal of, quote, running the world in the new world order may be of a vampiric nature. And maybe of the order of, you know, living onto a few hundred years in that right because of these things that they do, and rituals that they take part in, and blood baths, and, you know, all kinds of things that, yes, once again, have been spoken of in vampiric lore for a long, long time.
Right. No, and it's terrifying to think that.
Yeah.
That I mean, and that's the thing is, we talk about cryptids, we talk about vampires and werewolves and all these monsters, but it's humans that are the scariest monster of all, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're the ones that are willing to hide the secret. You know,
Hey,
if you came out and said, like, hey, just so you know, like, every about once a month for a couple nights, like, I wig out, dude. And there's some crazy stuff. So, just so you know, like, that happens.
Right.
You know, like, maybe the village would be more accepting instead of you lying 28 days out of the month. That was crazy. You see,
no, that's
just
true.
See how those lambs were killed down the road? What was that?
It's true, but at the same time, you know, it's funny because I actually was just watching the Wolfman with Anthony Hopkins.
Oh yeah.
And my favorite scene is he's sitting there and he's telling everybody, I'm gonna kill you all.
This, like, is what happens.
yeah
and like, fair warning,
so
dude.
Exactly. And they're just sitting there in disbelief. Yeah. So it's,
hey, welcome to dinner, but heads up.
Yeah, exactly. And it takes the extreme to happen right in front of your eyes for people to believe it, though. And so sometimes I can see why maybe people don't just come out with certain things, because, you know, you can sit there and say point blank, hey, this is exactly what it is, and they're going to brush it off as, no, that, you know, guy's in a suit. Or it was a trick of the light.
Now, as somebody who has been exposed to that subculture and been there in the subculture, and has this been a subculture that, at least according to them, has been around? Is the modern vampiric subculture and that vampiric relationship something that has been around for hundreds of years, or is it something that is much more of a modern exploration
of vampirism? I believe, you know, I remember hearing about this underground culture back in 2005, which was the year that I graduated. And it was really underground. It wasn't something that was really talked about a lot. And then through being kind of, you know, having connections and everything within it, I believe it was back in 1995 that it really kind of formed, and people, I think that it was always there, but it started to get a name then. So it's not something that had a name for, you know, hundreds of years, but it became more modernized and more... Mm. you know, like, no, we're going to make this culture and we're going to come together because these are other like-minded individuals. And as technology, you know, of course, became more and more available. Gosh, I remember getting a computer. This is back in, I think, 2004 or 2005. And I didn't know that any kind of culture like that existed until I was,
yeah.
I was in an AOL chat room.
Yeah. Well, no, no. And, you know, we talk about that on this show all the time. There was a, and especially yeah. with people who have been abducted, things like that, because hey, you could hop online and I guarantee you could probably find a pretty darn local to you support group.
Yeah, no, and that was what was so crazy. And
you couldn't back then. Trying right. to find somebody to go to who had maybe experienced this as well. Have fun mm-hmm. with that.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
And it was a different thing. And even my Lord, the people that I knew that were vampires, things like that, were the folks that I met at my local occult shop whenever I was there buying books on amulets, talismans, stuff like that. Okay. And doing my esoteric research in life, that is when I met them and where I met them. And they were much more of an offshoot of the Wiccan community.
Right. See, and it was fascinating to be able to meet other people and to learn about these things. And this goes into even with, I remember when I didn't even know that podcasting or podcast was a thing until 2015. I've always been a little bit behind the times, if you will. And when I went on my first podcast and I told my experiences and my stories, and then all of a sudden I get these messages from people all over the world saying, I've had this experience too, or I've seen this as well. And it was just, it was fascinating. So with technology and the development of all these things, podcasts and chat rooms, social media, it's really changed so many communities and created communities. And, you know, but everything definitely, it comes from something. It comes from somewhere. So there's this current, this energy that I feel that has always been there with us. We just, divine timing, you know, we had to wait until the time was right that we could actually start really coming together.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, Even looking at, I think right now what we deal with more than anything else in the world is the concept of psychic vampirism, and the idea of people that, yes, just live on and thrive on drama, don't know how to live without it, don't know how to have a happy life without it.
Right.
And yeah, that is we say it on the show all the time. You are responsible for the energy that you drag into the room with you. And it's something that sadly, once again, our responses biologically between cortisol and serotonin, cortisol being the drug of panic that our brain produces,
right.
You know, once again, thank God for panic. Without panic, we would not be here. It has driven so much of humanity. The idea of self-preservation, the idea of it's driven us to so many beautiful and amazing things. We would not have evolved the way that we've evolved without cortisol. But man, is it a dangerous, addictive thing. And it's hard not to look around and just be absorbed by darkness. It's hard not to feed into that. And it's hard not to especially be taken by people that are willing to lead you down a path in order to later corrupt. You know?
Oh yeah. No, biggest thing that my dad always told me was don't go to fear. Don't go to fear. Because I would. That was a habit of mine. I was constantly going to fear. And it's something that I, even to this day, at 36, I have to stop myself and remind myself of what he would say and be like, okay, I'm going to fear. I need to not do that.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. It's hard not to give in to that. And it's hard not to live in a state of fear. The last 3 years of the world in general should be a prime example of that to everybody. What it is to literally live a life immersed in fear on the daily. I've lived a life immersed in news on the daily for over the last decade of my life. So yeah, people are like, oh my God, but at the same token, there's a lot of horrifying things, but man, you know, if you really, really read the news, there's a lot of really cool stuff out there too.
Yes,
a lot of really true. Great stuff that's happening that just gets buried in the news cycle. Cause sorry, it's not sexy.
Or scary.
Yeah.
Those are the top two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And scary is sexy, you know?
Yeah. That's true.
It's horrifying is sexy. It's pretty incredible. But that is literally what drives media, and most people are driven by media. So yeah, it's interesting how to see even that is vampiric in its nature. And
that's true.
In the way that society has given it the power that it has. We all of this comes through consent. Every bit of whether mm-hmm. it's the traditional Nosferatu something coming to you to feast off of you because you've left a window open or invited it in like in Lost Boys, where he keeps hovering outside the window. Come on, just open the window. Let me in, buddy.
Yeah.
Come on.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it all boils down to consent. Even whenever it comes to the modern concept of a vampiric relationship, that in and of itself is consent between a host and symbiote.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting exploration, just the concept of vampire and to break it down and to see how entrenched it is in the world around us. And once again, how romanticized it has become when it is something that is truly intrinsic to all of us.
Yeah, and I love that you are able to put it that way and to really present this information in this episode like this, because I don't think that a lot of people really think this way or have chosen to look at it this way, because it's really easy to put our blinders on and go, oh, it's only this. It's again, staying in our safe box and really holding on to those concepts that we see, whether it's on TV or in a book, what feels comfortable to us. But to look at it in a much wider scope and to look at it as a universal thing, human species thing, it really puts it in a different light. And I wish that we could do this on so many different subjects, because I believe that as we go through life with these blinders on and these safe little boxes, it's a disservice to, you know, to all of us.
Yep.
And if we can step out of those boxes and really open our minds, and not only through opening our minds, we can also, that facilitates healing within ourselves. Yep. And as we work on ourselves, we really can change the whole world and raise the vibration of all of humanity if we can just take those blinders off.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and once again, it's the one of the phrases I use all the time is the only thing you get from distillation is something volatile.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And a distillation mentality is what we live in most of the time. Because of this, this is an absolute.
Right. Exactly.
All witches are evil.
Yes. Right.
No. Let's go back to the real concept of what a witch was in a village, mm-hmm. and what they did and you know, the hermit that lived outside the village that you went to for non-traditional healing, things like yeah. that. You know, that's what a witch was. It wasn't somebody mm-hmm. green riding on a broomstick. We have been sold the product and mm-hmm. and bought it hook, line, and sinker. And that is how it is with most of these topics, unfortunately. Right. And we've forgotten the concept of cultural exploration and exploration mm-hmm. of these topics. And really, even breaking down the psychological phenomenology of why these tropes exist to us to begin with.
Right.
Because,
you know, and that's so interesting. Oh, go ahead.
No, no. I was just going to say, once again, to get down to the root of vampirism, it's where we all start. It is a show of vulnerability. Like, oh, yes, yeah. There's ultimate potential. There's ultimate potential in your life, too. But you've got to be vulnerable mm-hmm. enough as well in your life.
Oh, yeah. No, exactly. And, you know, it's one of those things where when you put it that way, something that I've been discussing with a colleague of mine is, what is the psychology behind all the different things here in the paranormal, whether it's a ghost, whether it's a dog man, Mothman, or sure. the alien, or whatever. I've been curious about the idea of these being representing different parts of ourselves.
Mm.
And the psychology behind it all. And, you know, to be able to go into this with vampirism and to look at how the vampire really represents that part of us with needing that companionship and looking at the loneliness and it's fascinating. So if we can take and do this with all the different, you know, cryptids and everything, it would be a fascinating thing to put it all together and to step back and really, really be able to look at that. I think that it could potentially facilitate a lot of self-awareness and healing, and it could help us all on different levels that maybe we hadn't thought about before.
Absolutely. And once again, break down truly a lot of cultural barrier, not burial. I almost say cultural yes. burial.
yes, I agree.
Freudian much?
I love it.
but in sincerity, because it's even culturally in America, we process death in different ways. I come from a Cajun upbringing. I mean I remember going to actual wakes when I was a kid, mm-hmm. where, like, yeah, we spent the night in the funeral home with a body, Jack, for days.
Right. Yeah. No, I remember having a open casket funeral for one of my grandmas, yeah. and I haven't been to one of those in forever, but I remember my yeah. grandpa, he held me over it, because I was just a wee thing.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing her, you yeah. know, and yeah, yeah. He did a lot.
I mean, me and cousins literally joke about playing tag at night,
right? Well,
like,
yeah,
like around a corpse, like,
yeah, yeah. Like, well, I mean,
stop playing in the viewing room, get out of here.
Right.
But if you go talk to my wife, who is from Massachusetts and only from a few years beyond me, younger, mm-hmm. only about 3 years younger than me. Culturally, not the case with death or funerals at all.
Right.
And if you visit the West Coast, very much the same thing, you know. So even culturally here in America to this day, we process death in different ways.
Even
the whole move to the American funerary movement. And what it became and what it is now, and the loss of home viewings, because the whole concept of funeral parlor, like, it happened in your parlor,
right?
Like you were put on a slab of ice in your home, because unless it was something tragic or horrific and you were disfigured in some way, like that process that we were talking about earlier, the decay, things like that, like that takes a long time. That takes that, you know, outside in a village and heat and everything else, it'll happen a whole lot faster. Most definitely. Right. But in a home in the 1900s, it could take a few days. So, yeah, they actively had home funerals until a long time. And there has been a big movement back to that in America and being able to offer that option to people because of the grieving process.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's amazing the differences for after, you know, after loved ones have been gone. And, you know, if you look at, I don't know if I can pronounce it correctly, Dia de los Muertos? Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes. It's one of those things where, you know, they have their pictures up.
Yeah.
They have a placement for them at the table, and they celebrate them still as if they were still here and carry on their memories. And I think that is so important. We lost that. We were disconnected from our ancestors. And when we are able to connect with our ancestors and know where we come from, I really feel that it's very empowering, you know, because you know, you hear these phrases about, you know, we were the witches that they, you know, couldn't burn or they wanted to. I can't remember the phrase of it. But when we are able to do the things that our ancestors fought for us to do, that they wished that they could have, and to know that they're proud of us, and they're still very much a part of our family. I mean, we come from the love of thousands, and it needs to be honored. It needs to be remembered. But death has become, you know, something that people just kind of ignore, or they don't process properly, at least. They don't want to think about it. They want to just move on to the next, which, of course, then ties into our instant gratification that we have these days. And we're constantly throwing it out, you know, and jumping to the new thing, which... It's really devastating for us, I think.
Yeah. Well, it really does act to our detriment. I mean, to begin with, we here in the West have a different concept of family. And that tracks to a lot of things, and especially in the treatment of death and our dead, and in how we process death. Because it shouldn't be, I don't know. For years, I guess people thought I was morbid whenever I would say, hey, you know, a little jealous. I don't know. I guess that is part of my spiritual journey that at this point in life, I've lost family members. I've lost friends in various ways. And it's the fact of, I ain't getting away from it.
Yeah,
I ain't getting away from it. Death and taxes, Jack. You ain't getting away from them. I don't care how good you are. I don't care how good you are. So you can process that fear or whatever you want at any point you like. You know?
Oh, yeah. Well, and here's the thing. Or go ahead.
No. Go. Please.
It's one of those things where if we really faced death, if we really looked at it the way that you just said, like, hey, this is inevitable, it's part of life, you know how differently that we could all live? It's one of the ways that I live my life, because I've encountered some pretty hairy situations in my life, and I feel really, really lucky to be alive. And we don't ever know. You really do not ever know when it's your time. You go to sleep tonight and never wake up in the morning. You could have some weird undiagnosed heart thing, and that's what gets you. And you could go and get in the car, and, you know, you could be a great driver, but maybe somebody else wasn't. And when you think about life that way, you don't have to like live in fear. You don't have to let it loom over you, but you can change. Like for me, I don't believe in going to bed mad. I'm never going to fight with someone and then go to sleep. I'm never going to get into an argument right before saying goodbye when they leave the grocery store or something. I'm going to choose love and happiness in every moment that I possibly can, especially when knowing that we really, and this can be kind of a little bit controversial, but we really are in control of our emotions. We choose how we feel. And when we can realize that, and when we can embody that, and then when we couple that with the idea of knowing that, you know, right now could be your last breath, it really changes the way that you live and the way that you interact with everybody that you come across.
There is a concept, as I've said on the show a few times, I'm a fourth degree Knight of Columbus. One of the symbols of the fourth degree is the skull and crossbones. Memento mori, tempus fugit. Time flies, remember death. And the idea behind that is, what are you leaving behind? Because you should be living every moment from now till then, remembering what you're leaving behind.
Are you
leaving behind a path for others behind you that's better? Are you leaving a better world for your kids? Are you leaving your family members in the best way that you can leave them? Because memento mori, tempus fugit, you ain't getting away from it.
Right. And that's beautifully put and so important for people to hear.
And it is the fact of you, it's Fight Club, man. You choose your level of involvement, quite literally. if you wake up every day and first thing out of your mouth is, man, you know, today's going to suck. Probably about 82% will suck every friggin' time if that's what you wake up and say. You know, we've spoken before about manifestation, self-fulfilling prophecies, things like that. You really do have to be careful for that because it's there. It's there. And you can become your own psychic vampire, and you can become the person that's literally sucking the marrow out of your own life by your own disbelief in yourself and your own potential and your own fear. Like you said, like my problem for years was literally fear. And I remember explaining it one time because I had a Spanish professor that was like, Chris, like you tutor people in Spanish and they come from a D to a B. Like if you would just come to class, man, just come to class.
Yeah.
Like I can't start you at better than a C. You're not in class.
Right.
But I can see that you know the material, like what's wrong. And I would literally explain to her that I would sit and I would think about things in such a fractal way and in such a long reaching way, impact wise on the world around me, that I would literally be moved to a point of indecision.
Oh, and I understand that.
And frozen in fear of decision. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that would even be to like leave.
Mm-hmm. No, I've experienced that as well. You know, it's terrifying. Like in the very beginning, even with all of this, I remember how scared I was to appear on a podcast for the first time. It was a pre-recorded thing and it was just audio.
Yeah.
But I remember I was just shaking. And then it got to the point of, oh, okay, now I'm actually going to appear on like these YouTube videos.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
was terrifying. And, you know, to be honest, it's something that I still do struggle with. I've always struggled with public speaking. But when you're able to...
Biggest fear out there. Don't be ashamed.
Well, and it's one of those things where when you can admit and you can say, this is my fear,
Yep.
It makes it easier to do it. And there's a quote as well that says, whatever you're afraid of, do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've definitely been working on that. So I understand what you're saying.
I set myself on fire. Literally. It's one of our commercial breaks. You see a guy on fire and a dude's in beer shirt.
Oh.
That's me. Like,
oh,
I,
wow.
I
oh, that's amazing.
I set myself on fire. And now it's one of those like, well, what am I going to do to top that? Like,
yeah.
So I'm looking at diving with sharks.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I won't skydive. I won't skydive. Sorry. A lot of people go skydiving. And I'm like, if I'm going to do that, I'm going to go to like iFly. Sorry, man. I got no reason to jump out of a perfectly good airplane. I love flying way too much.
Yeah, no, heights is another really big fear of mine for sure. And actually, when I was in search and rescue, I was up on a 5-story parking garage, and they were, you know, practicing rappelling, getting people off of the ledge of cliffs, you know.
Yeah.
So I wasn't somebody that wanted to rappel, but I was there that day, and I was like, all right, you know, I'll be the patient. And so they strapped me down. In the, you know, I'm
that almost be worse. You have no control over the situation.
Oh, let me tell you. So it was so bad. They pushed me off the building, right? And let me tell you, some of the knots came loose. And that thing was straight up and down. The only thing that saved me was the knot that I tied on
thank
my
you,
belt.
No. Yeah.
All set. Yeah, and that was absolutely terrifying. You know, and that's why I say there's definitely been those moments where I've come close. I mean, so yeah, and I plan to never go skydiving or bungee jumping.
Oh, I've definitely had the moments. I've definitely had the moments where I have made my deals with the divine. No doubt about it. And yeah, I'd rather not be there again. I'm all good. That was a very controlled circumstance with somebody that I trust very much who, like, aside from doing AV work like I do, goes out and literally, like, sets school buses on fire and jumps them through pallets of burning things and that kind of stuff. Like, that's what he does. So it was like, I'm in good hands. I'm in what I would consider to be the safest hands possible. About 3 steps above Carney, not quite Hollywood.
right.
I love you, Dr. Danger. I love you. but one of those, like, you know, hey, as a guy who got into this whole thing because I love special effects in movies and horror movies and all that, like, it was a life moment. Like, yeah, I'd love to do a full body burn, and I had the opportunity and I took it. So yeah, you know, fear of that, pretty well conquered. You know, and I'm willing to conquer more at this point in life. But yeah, there was a long time where I was my own psychic vampire. I was the one robbing myself of every bit of that. I was the one gaslighting myself and stealing those opportunities from myself. So,
and that's huge to be able to admit, not just to yourself, but to share with everybody. Because when we can really take that hard look at ourselves and admit that and be like, all right, you know, then you can change it and amazing things can happen. And the universe is just waiting, you know, just waiting for us, because it's got gifts and it's ready. You know, you just got to say yes. You just got to face it and be like, all right, I'm going to get out of my own way.
Yeah. Yeah. And just remember the fact of it's a slinky. It's a slinky. It's a spring, man. It is coiled energy waiting to happen. All you have to do is push.
Oh yeah.
The rest will happen. It slinks on its own once you move it. It's pretty incredible. So you just have to be the one ready to move it. And And I want to thank you, as always, for coming on. We always had such great conversations and really dig into other facets and sides of topics. It was great exploring the concept of vampires and vampirism with you, especially in a modern concept. So,
well, this has been amazing, and I always love coming on with you. And it's, you know, I can't wait to come back. So again, thank
absolutely.
You so much.
You are always welcome back on. Before we let you go, of course, let everybody know where they can go to find out the latest from Aunt Celine, where they can go to follow KPNL, where they can go to read your stuff, because you are writing at a couple of places now. So let everybody know everything about Aunt Celine.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so first of all, we'll talk about KPNL Radio, which is kpnl-db.com. You can also find it on Facebook. There's a Facebook group and a Facebook page. All you do is type in KPNL Radio. And we have paranormal podcasts that run 7 days a week. And everything is, we've got so much more content. It used to start at 5 p.m. Pacific. Now it actually starts at 2 in the afternoon. So there's that. And then I have my new book called Aperture in the Veil, Born in a Preternatural World. That you can find on Amazon. You can also find me on Facebook under Anne Celine. And if you want a signed copy of the book, I'm more than happy to do that for you as well. The podcast right now, The Caravan Library of Lore, you can find that on Facebook. There is a Facebook page and a Facebook group for that. And then it's just easy to Google it, just Caravan of Lore or Caravan Library of Lore. And all of our episodes are listed there. Then for my writing, I'm actually a contributing writer to Paranormality Magazine. That's been a lot of fun. And then recently I have been brought on as well to U.S. Ghost Adventures, which I haven't gotten any of my articles there yet, but I'm in the process, and so it's been absolutely amazing. And then I actually have a speaking engagement coming up, so this is my first time announcing it. It is for a new online seminar for, it's called Ways We Witch. And everything hasn't quite dropped yet, but the dates are May 5th through 7th. They gave me permission to share about it.
Awesome.
And so I'm really excited to say that I'm going to be one of their speakers online there. And then there is a Dogman conference coming up, I believe, in September.
Yep.
And I am going to be speaking there in person with Ron Murphy. Which I'm super excited for that as well. So yeah, I've got
great stuff going on. Well, I can't wait to see you in person here at the Dogman Conference. And of course, between now and then, you are always welcome back on the show. I love everything that you are doing over at KPNL. It is great to see networks like yours picking up independent podcasts, getting them out to larger distribution and larger audiences. So thank you for all that you do over there. We are, of course, carried on KPNL as well. So make sure to stop on by, see all the great shows that are available there. Do hold the line real quick while we close things out, Anne. While we are online checking everything out, of course, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is the website. That is where you can find all of the episodes. That's where you can find us live every week. That's where you can find the Knowledge Vault full of declassified materials, as well as our Share Your Story link, where you, the experiencer, can give us your story and we can present it to our experts and authors and maybe help you dig a little bit deeper into your paranormal case. So thank you so much, as always, for tuning in, everybody. Thank you so much for keeping open minds, keeping open conversation. Take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.